This is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And it's that time of year again. Oh, yeah. We're talking about our top 10 movies from the first half of 2025, which is always a sort of wonky, futile effort, but yeah. One that I enjoy nonetheless.
I know. I feel like I struggled. I feel like a lot of movies in my top 10 now, like, do not stand a chance. Like, I'm waiting to replace them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, there's got to be good, better stuff coming down the pipeline.
I am sort of surprised. When I was putting my list together,
this is Shelby's.
Well, no, I went through everything I had seen so far this year. And I sort of just made everything that I thought was in contention, I moved over. And usually what happens is, like, I have like six things in contention and I sort of have to go back and troll through. And this year I had 15 movies where I was like, will this be in my top 10 at the end of the year? No, but in a couple of cases, I think yes.
Yeah.
But things that I really, I liked. I feel like so far this year has been a good year for movies for me. These aren't necessarily a lot of big blockbuster energy, but
it's not the worst year.
I've found some fun, smaller things that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, how many movies have you seen this year thus far? Like 2025 movies, do you know off the top?
That is a hard question. I've seen like 140 movies this year already. I've seen 134 movies this year, but a lot of those aren't movies from this year. Those are either old movies or movies from last year.
I can check.
Also, Letterboxd, I feel like, is slightly annoying because it it marks the year as for when it first came out, like the first festival stuff. So there are movies that came out wide release this year, but they're logged in Letterboxd as movies that came out in like 2023 or 2024, which I think is always sort of annoying. Okay, 2020.
No, you've seen like 50. 16, 24. Yeah, I'm bad at counting fast, but it looks like it's around 50.
But then also some of these movies on this list are like Tribeca debuts that haven't been released yet. So that also makes it sort of weird.
Well, my list is like a total of 28 movies thus far. That's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah.
28. I finally watched Drop. It's streaming on Peacock, so.
Ugh.
Did you mention the waiter in your review of that? Because the waiter was pretty funny. It was that's realistic.
The waiter is funny, but I hated that movie.
No, I know you hated it.
Oh my God.
I know it's not going to be in this episode. That's why I mentioned it.
Okay. Well. I have to go to the bathroom again for the fourth time on this date. It's like,
what did you want her to do? What did you want her to do?
I want
Matt was like, this just, guy is weird. He should be leaving.
Right. Yes. No. He should be like, something has happened. Like, ma'am, are you okay? Like, do we need to get you someplace? Or like... just wild. Another movie that won't be making this list is Another Simple Favor. I know people were really waiting with bated breath to see if that cracked our top 10s. I don't think it will.
No. So do we usually just go, we switch, right? We
just go back 10. And forth, starting at 10 and working our way up. Okay.
I want to finesse this.
I am starting with I like to start with a fun one. I will be number 10 is I Know What You Did Last Summer, aka Riverdale the movie.
Yeah.
This movie, when I saw it initially, I was kind of like, okay, this was wacky and sort of bad. The longer I've sat with it, the more I'm like, oh, this was like camp and so funny and like weird to me in a really great way. So I've really come around to loving I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's just Riverdale. Like, it is Riverdale. And I love Riverdale. It is perfect in all the wrong ways, but all the right ways at the same time. And just like every decision that this movie made is bizarre. The fact that it's like the bridal shower and the woman is wearing a bikini. It's like, what? I understand we're at the, and like a beach town, but we're not at the beach. Like, why is she opening presents at the bridal shower in a bikini? Like, no one has ever done that before, but for some reason we're doing that in this movie. It's just halfway through, a random creepy pastor shows up for really like no reason. Yeah. It's just
exquisite. It's everything you could want. Yeah.
And I had to rank it high. And I hope they make a sequel.
That's gorgeous. I'm sure they will. 1,000,000%. But I also chose a campy number 10 with Jurassic World Rebirth.
Which was
essentially Riverdale, but make it dinosaurs, I think.
That's the weirdest thing anyone's ever said about Riverdale. To lump Riverdale in with Jurassic World Rebirth.
I had a good time watching this movie, and it is laughably bad and falls apart under, you know, any sort of analysis, but I still enjoyed enough of the set pieces and like action sequences that I was like, yeah. And you know what? I still go hard for Mr. Jonathan Bailey with a weird, nerdy American accent.
I hated that about
humanity's failures. I love it so much. I think it's really interesting. And I look forward to the sequel.
Oh, gosh. Kill me. Okay, number 9 I have is a movie that was at Toronto last year and got like a VOD, I guess, probably released this year, but I really liked, called Bring Them Down. This is a movie about two Irish sheep farmers played by Christopher Abbott and Barry Keoghan.
Okay.
And they're sort of like their families are in a feud that is escalating in violence. And I think something that is really interesting is basically the first half of the movie is the sequence of events from one of their perspectives. And then the second half of the movie is the same sequence of events from the other family's perspectives. So it's got like a vantage point kind of thing.
I thought it was
really, really taut and really like, it's a thriller in a way that I thought was really like exciting and interesting. And I felt on the edge of my seat the entire time. And it's also just about like these Irish sheep farmers who are like upset about each other, like the sheep grazing on each other's land, which I thought was a sort of.
But it's not a comedy.
No, this is like a thriller. No, this is very serious. Like people are dying in this movie. It's like these two sort of warring families in like a Hatfield McCoy kind of thing.
Yeah.
But with these like Irish sheep farmers.
Okay, cool. And it's not streaming anywhere. It's just a mythic film.
I think it is streaming. Let me see where it is.
Bring Them Down.
It's on Mubi.
Oh, Mubi, yeah. Right alongside Oscar winning. What was that?
The Substance.
Yeah.
Mubi is, you know, it's getting bigger. Put some respect on Mubi's name. Okay, what's your number 9?
My number 9 is Opus.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember this. Yeah,
I do remember it.
Again, another movie that really struggles to hold itself together under a close inspection. Yes. But the music has stuck with me, and I am a sucker for Io, and also John Malkovich just like really channeling his inner Prince to great success. It was so bonkers and yet not bonkers enough in some ways. And I find myself just enjoying that space. It was so weird. I don't know if I could recommend it to people who didn't see it. But then at the same time, I'm like, but it was fun, right?
I'm still listening to the music. Yeah. And second, that scene where What's-His-Face just gets shot with the bow and arrow out of nowhere is so funny. I think about that all the time.
Yeah, and then she has to shave her pubes. I don't know. The tension was interesting and funny, and I wish they'd done more with it, but I'm glad for what I got.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my number 8, which apparently is also on Mubi as I'm looking this up.
God.
This is my most pretentious pick, so we all knew that there was going to be one of these coming. Okay, Grand Theft Hamlet. This is basically during the pandemic, a bunch of British actors. This is a documentary. During the pandemic, a bunch of British actors were like, we want to do Shakespeare, but we can't do Shakespeare because we're stuck in our house during lockdown. So they decided that they were going to stage a production of Hamlet in the video game world of Grand Theft Auto, which is very like moving, but also really funny because it's like these actors wandering around Grand Theft Auto trying to find people who will be in this Hamlet production with them. And then it's like, oh, they're like trying to do a scene and then somebody comes up and like kills them or like, you know, it's very sort of raucous, but then also has like a high art quality to it because it is Hamlet that they're attempting to do. I really loved it. It's very funny in some ways, but also serious and sad because it's set during COVID. So there's like some interesting developments there. And it also tells the kind of backstory of like what these actors are going through during the pandemic. So I enjoyed it. It's under 90 minutes and it is also on Mubi. So if you get your Mubi subscription, you can see several of these movies.
Yeah. Wait, so Grand Theft is like an open world or whatever? Like it's like...
Yeah, it's like an open world. So you can do whatever. And they put like they put a thing on a message board that was sort of like, hey, we're trying to, you know, do this production of Hamlet. If anybody is interested, like, you know, come to this spot in the world at this time. And then and then they do rehearsals and, you know, trying to figure out like, oh, well, we could stage this scene on this blimp that's flying around. And we could do, you know.
That is like, interesting.
Yeah. When Ophelia commits suicide, like, how is that character going to die? Like, we can hit her with a car. We can, you know, like, so there's a lot of, yeah, it's fascinating.
Okay. Provocative. I'll have to see if I get another free movie subscription, but, okay. Entering basic territory. I have Superman at number 8.
Okay.
Which I think, yeah, speaks for itself. It was a surprisingly entertaining movie, and I liked the choice of, like we talked about in our episode, just setting it really in the thick of things. Like, you don't need an explanation of this guy. It's Superman. And I liked Lois Lane's character in it, which I know you disagree with. But overall, I enjoyed it, and I do appreciate a James Gunn needle drop. So I think there were some fun things happening, including Superdog, so...
I liked Superman, which, I mean, we did a whole episode on it. I don't have it on my top 10 list, but I don't hate that pick.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
At number 7, I have Sorry Baby, which just came out. I have a couple movies on this list that just came out recently, and I do think had we done this at the beginning of July, I would have had to, like, scrounged around for some other movies.
Thank you.
Sorry Baby is the directorial debut from Eva Victor, who you probably recognize from TikTok. She's like a TikTok comedian who then wrote and directed and stars in this movie. It's about a college, like a young college professor and her friendship with her sort of like best friend from like when they were in graduate school, that's played by Naomi Ackie from, what was that movie that you liked that I didn't like, with the cult?
Yeah, The Murder.
And Channing Tatum.
Blink Twice,
yes. And I loved both of them in that there is like, it's about sort of their friendship now and then looks back at things that have happened to them previously. And there are some like, kind of
is it like, spoiler to mention what it's about? I don't know. Seems
I mean, I feel like the trailer kind of hints at it but doesn't say outright exactly what happened to her, but like she is clearly dealing with some past trauma that came from a situation when they were in grad school together and they are sort of now having to process that several years later as adults, and there's flashbacks to the years that they were in grad school. But I think it's a really good movie about friendship and sort of like having to figure out how you are going to support your friend who has gone through something that's really terrible while also not being able to, like, because you did not go through that yourself. Like, there's a part of that journey that you can only, that person has to take alone, and sort of how you handled that. So I found it very moving. And it's also very funny in parts. Yeah. So,
well, Rob was like, oh, there's this like new comedy coming out. It looks fun. And I was like, what? And he's like, oh, sorry, baby. And I was like, I don't think that's a comedy in the way you're expecting. And it turns out he only saw the clip where the judge is like, how would your friends describe you? And she's like, tall. And he just, so I had to break it to him what the movie was actually about. But I do want to see it. I think he just was expecting something different.
Well, I think based on her TikTok presence and her just like comedy in general, and also like all the late night shows and stuff that she's been doing, you think it's going to be a lot more goofy maybe. And it is like, oh, wait, this is actually about some heavy stuff.
Yeah, that's funny. Not funny, but
yeah,
I have wanted to see that. I've been checking my theater for it. So something to look forward to. Okay, my number 7 is One of Them Days, starring Kiki Palmer and SZA. And it's excellent. It's hilarious. And anyone who says differently is tasteless, okay? It's over the top, sure, but that's comedy. And Kiki, enough said. It's so good. So I hope more people watch it.
I know. That I loved watching that in theaters. That was such a fun movie experience and an actual funny comedy.
Yeah, and great PR too. So,
I know. And I think they're making a sequel.
Oh, really?
I want to say that I saw that somewhere.
So, I guess that makes sense. I mean, but why?
Because they're funny, and I want to watch more stuff. And it was all set during the day. Like, you can come up with all kinds of, like, it's the exact type of movie that you want a sequel to.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be happy.
It's just a hangout movie.
Yeah.
Cute. Number 6 for me is a movie called Sovereign. That's a Nick Offerman, Jacob Tremblay movie that came out a couple of weeks ago. I think it was like a weird I saw this at Tribeca, but it was like a VOD kind of release that's out. Like now it's, you can pay to watch it. And it's about Nick Offerman is a father who's in like a very far right, crazy cult and is raising his son. And it's based on a true story. And I really love Nick Offerman. He's such a good actor, I think. And this is like a big, meaty, serious, role for him. He's so good in it. Jacob Tremblay is very good as his son. And I think it's very timely in sort of how it portrays the like mind of a conservative that's like trying to latch on to something in the world and like can't quite get its foothold. And so like ventures further and further into these like extreme ideologies that where you've lost all sense of, you know, like reality, but just because you are like in desperate need to hold on to something. And I think it did a really good job of portraying that and then portraying his relationship with his son, who's kind of trying to figure out like, okay, how do I get out of this? So it's based on a true story. It's a sad movie, but I thought it was very, very good. And Nick Offerman is just so good in it.
I would say I'd watch it, but I probably just won't.
Yeah, I mean,
no,
I don't know if you're.
I was
just gonna say, I feel like for me, there's a certain like weird interest level, like sort of having grown up in a cult. Yeah. I'm fascinated by those stories and seeing that world on screen.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel the same, or if you're more like, no, I think I'm good to leave that behind. We don't need to go back there and dredge up those things. Curious.
Yeah. Yeah. But something that did resonate with me personally is my number 6, which is Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts.
Asterisk the New Avengers. Which is also a surprise, I guess, because I don't know. We've talked so much about superhero movies, and now there's 2 in my top 10, and it's like, Shelby, let it go. But I do think Thunderbolts was just a nice refresh, and it was fun and interesting, and Florence Pugh is always just like so magnetic, like just so pleasant to watch, even in something that maybe isn't like, you know, this isn't winning Oscars or whatever. But I do think they managed to play with interesting concepts, and the depression and the angle of it and how dark it got for a Marvel movie, I think, was something that surprised and captured me. And yeah, I think we both just had similar feelings about this movie and its portrayal of depression and all of that. So I really liked it. And I think that should have a sequel too, but we'll see if Marvel allows them to breathe.
Yeah, I will get back to Thunderbolts later on.
I'm sure it's coming. List. Yeah.
My number five is Ojai, the Logan Lerman.
No, I wanted to see that.
Molly Gordon movie that just came out this past weekend, I think.
Yeah.
I love Logan Lerman. I love Molly Gordon. I think that she's so funny. And this is such a funny comedy. And also like an interesting, I think, critique on dating. There's definitely a thought piece, I think, this year about all of the dating movies mm-hmm. that we're getting, because I think there are a lot of them that handle relationships very differently, mm-hmm. including, of course, Drop, because that is, yeah. you know, also a commentary on dating. Yeah. But in Ojai, this couple is going on their sort of like first vacation together, and they're at this Airbnb, and while there, and they discover that there's like handcuffs and stuff, some like BDSM things in one of the closets, and they're like, oh my gosh, like, should we try it? And they're in the middle of this when Logan Lerman is like, oh, like, I don't, like, did you think that we were in a relationship? I just thought like we were having like fun, I didn't want anything serious. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, we've been seeing each other for months. And so then she leaves him locked up in the bed and is like, I'm pissed off. Yeah. And so then it sort of just devolves from there. But it's very funny and sort of like Misery, but like for millennials in an entertaining kind of goofy way. Geraldine Viswanathan is in it. It's great. I loved it.
That's good to know. It's on my radar. I feel like it seems like a premise that can either work or you kind of are like cringing by the end, but
excited. There's definitely some cringy moments, but I enjoyed it nonetheless.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure this one will come up again too, but, number five for me is The Materialists. This is a movie that like honestly bothers me the more I think about it, but I appreciate the conversation it opens. Like, I think I like when the criticism of a film is as interesting as the film itself. Like, it's just such a meaty movie to talk about and think about and discourse over. And so I think that it would have been lower, except that it also is just like a beautifully made film, and the technical aspects of that are also something that elevated it. And yeah, I think obviously it'll be in the discourse probably through award season. I don't know. We'll see. It seems like it could be one of those flash in the pan just type things just based on some of the critics' response, but I do think it's an interesting movie.
Dakota Johnson Golden Globe nominee. That feels for comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you have the genre in there. But yeah, we can talk about it more when you inevitably bring it up, if I were to assume.
Yes. Okay. Well, my number four is Thunderbolts, you know, you just talked about. I think that, as with every... I think the thing that separates for me like a good movie that I really like and like a great movie is how it like resonates and connects with my life in the time that I watch it. You know, like I think about like Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is this incredible movie. Obviously, lots of people loved it. It won Best Picture. But when I saw it, it really resonated with me and and what I was going through and my relationship with my parents and, you know, like being a gay person, like just it connected with me on so many different levels. And I think as somebody who has dealt with a lot of depression and dealt with that, I thought I was maybe had sort of moved past a lot of that. And then with all of the cancer stuff, it came roaring back in some ways. Mm-hmm. Watching this movie was really like emotional and impactful for me in a way that I have never been impacted by a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was so well done. I thought it was funny in the right ways and really touched on something a lot deeper. And I felt like my sort of journey with depression, it felt very realistic to me as it was portrayed in this way on screen. And I really liked that. So I feel like, yeah, this will be one of those movies that really like sticks with me for a while.
Yeah. Good old Bob, you know?
Mm-hmm. Good old Bob.
Isn't he in another movie where he's named Bob? Anyways, I saw him.
Lewis Pullman. How many movies has he been in named Bob? Let's investigate the filmography. Well, he's going to be Bob in Avengers Doomsday, apparently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there.
And he's
Bob in
Bob and Top Gun Maverick.
Top Gun. Yeah, that's right. That's the one. Bob. Good old Bob. But no, yes. It's good. He did a good job.
And he
job.
Plays somebody named Major in Catch-22, the TV show. So I don't know if you have been following along with that, but
yeah, love to hear it. Okay, so we're entering top four. K-pop Demon Hunters. I know you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't watched it yet.
And I'm probably wearing you out of it, honestly. I feel like it's going to be one of those things that you just resent how often I bring it up. But
no, I'll like it. I just have to like one, I don't have internet in my apartment right now, so I can't
watch
it. I've heard
it's going to get a theatrical run soon. Of course. Because it's a Netflix movie. It's an animated Netflix movie from Sony. Sony Pictures did like Mitchells versus the Machines, which also ended up getting a theatrical run. And I think also Netflix waits to see how these play out. And then they want them in the discourse for award season. Then they're going to put them in theaters again. But I have it on good authority from someone who works at Netflix that they're working on a theatrical run for it, which is exactly what it deserves. Again,
you have it on good authority from someone who are you hanging out with who works at Netflix, Shelby?
Just someone in marketing. I don't know. But anyways, yeah. So excited for that. This is a story about a K-pop group, a girls group, who fight demons with their voice, but then the demons send a boy band to steal their fans. So it's like kind of over the top, campy. It has the same styling of Into the Spider-Verse. And then on top of it, it just has great music. So it's taken Netflix by storm. It's been like number one for the past 4 weeks. Everyone's obsessed with it. Especially if you have a child, it's like one of those things where it becomes the millennial mom's whole personality. And the kid's like, yeah, that's fine. Present company included. But yeah, it's a good time. It's a very sweet story and also just like a tight 90 minutes, straightforward, and it fueled by some straight up bangers. Like, honestly, it's one of those movies where you like listen to it and it's like, why do pop stars struggle to write a good song? Like, it seems like if you put enough minds to it, you can make a good song. But some of these releases, you're just like, wow, okay, get a better writer, I guess. Like, come on.
Yeah, it is always odd, like, when a musician can't seem to have a hit when it's like, okay, but it's very interesting, especially when you're like, okay, you are Britney Spears, like you have had so many hits. How come this album has no hits?
Yeah.
Like why
yeah.
are like yeah. where did they
Perry,
go?
You in the room with us? Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
No, exactly. Katie Trudeau, are you here?
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about that. Dear God. Okay. Anyways, my number three is Materialist. We are back on this again. I understand some of the critiques of this movie. I think it's such a fascinating movie. Like, it's really unlike anything that I can remember seeing, because it is sort of a rom-com, like that's how it was built, but it's saying so much about like dating culture, and especially dating culture in 2025 in New York City. And it just felt so resonant to me. And some of the lines and the way people talk about dating and, you know, looking for a significant other, like, was just so brutally honest in a way that I think a lot of people think but won't say aloud. I also just found all of the stuff about like sort of beauty standards and the things that people do to their bodies, and also like the critiques on money, it just really hit on a lot of things that I feel like I think about a lot as somebody who lives in New York, and aligned with sort of my viewpoints on a lot of that stuff. So I was definitely sort of like, see everybody, like, this is what we need to be doing. Like, you can't be dating people for money. Like, you have to do it for love. Like, money's
not that important. She doesn't even love herself, Matt. She like literally hates herself. I wish there was more introspection happening. And I know you'll say there's tons, but I just feel like, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, it's an interesting movie to talk about. So I can't like fault it for opening a discourse. But yeah, I find it very fascinating.
It's almost more, it's better like as a societal critique almost than like as a character study. You know what I mean?
I guess. Yeah. But you're stuck with very specific characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's like, yeah, I think she has a very specific perspective, but to your point, is also trying to paint it as a broader narrative or statement. And I think that's where the disconnect happens, if people aren't fully on board with either one. Like, if they don't tap into both at the same time, then half the movie kind of falls apart or nettles a little bit. Because it's like there's a lot happening that I think worked, but then also I found myself bothered by what wasn't working for me personally. But great soundtrack, so, and gorgeous.
That is true.
Absolutely beautiful.
And stunning.
Yeah. Okay, so top three for me is Companion, which is the what's her name? Sophie Thatcher, Jack Quaid, robot horror comedy that came out in like January, February.
Yeah, I have this as number 11 on my list. I almost had it in the top 10 because I really did love
it. It's too low. I think this was such a fun movie and so fresh and interesting, and played to the strengths of both actors, who I kind of find annoying if in the wrong situation. But like, Jack Quaid is great here as the annoying kind of secretly nefarious boyfriend, and then Sophie Thatcher with her doe-eyed roboticness turned killer. I think everything was working here. I've rewatched it. It's funny. It's definitely a little too long, I think, is the main criticism I could give it. It's a little too top heavy with the second half. But all in all, I think it was such a fun movie that I wish more people would see it.
It was a great movie. I think a lot of people have seen this movie. You know what is a real weird thing that I have started doing on Letterboxd is you can go and search, like, you can just do browse most popular and then pick the year. And it is crazy to me, like, which movies have been logged the most times on Letterboxd. Like, currently Companion is number 5.
Like,
it is the fifth most watched movie of the year.
That's but guess true. What the, it have over a
guess what the second most watched movie of the year is?
Snow White.
And I think this shows you like how it skews more like film bro-y. The second most watched movie is Mickey 17, which feels wild to me. But I mean, it's
I mean, I guess that makes sense. It was a big director coming out after his Oscar win.
But it's like more people logged Mickey 17 than logged Superman, which, and I guess also Mickey 17 came out longer ago, so it's like more people could have watched it on VOD and stuff and logged it. But it is interesting. K-pop Demon Hunters is currently sitting at number 13, so
it's eking its way up there. No doubt
more people have logged that than Materialists, or Jurassic World.
Yeah, that checks out. I'm a believer in that. Yeah, for sure.
Wait, I forgot that a Mission Impossible movie came out this year. That really
that's
like,
not your top two. I thought for sure it was.
With no. Okay, my number two, which I will just keep on banging the drum for this movie that nobody is seeing or talking about, is On Becoming a Guinea Fowl.
Okay, wait. This was in your last year roundup.
Yes. Well, okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing with this movie. Here is the thing.
Okay, it came
out last year at the festival season.
Yeah, this is like Lizzo winning a Grammy for Best Movie.
No, exactly. And I was obsessed with it then. However, it did not technically get a release in the US until this year. And so like it is up for not for Oscars this current year, not last year. Okay. And also I just wanted to bring it up again because the last 10 times I brought it up, it was not available for people to watch really. Yes. And it is now on HBO Max. So I'm like, now anybody can watch this movie. It is a Zambian film, or I guess British slash Zambian, about a woman who grew up in Zambia, who moves to the UK and is now back in Zambia for a family's funeral, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the film opens, it's like the beginning, it's the middle of the night, and she is in a car and she like drives up and finds like the dead body of her uncle in the middle of the road. And it's like, what happened to him? Like, what is going on? And it's such a well-written and creatively interesting movie where the ending is so strong, and when you get to the ending and it like sort of makes the whole rest of the movie make sense in a way, it's just so genius. And I think it is fascinating in how it looks at gender and sort of like the patriarchy, especially in these more traditional societies, mm-hmm. and sort of like how those things work and how like women sort of are so enmeshed in it that they're sort of like fighting themselves. And it's such a good movie. And everybody I know who you saw it?
Yeah, I saw it. I told you. Wait, I thought I did. No. I told you we were watching it or something, I swear.
No, I did not know this. Did you like it?
Yeah, no, I liked it. It was good.
It was so good.
It was an interesting timing for watching it because we watched it and then literally we went to a funeral. It was interesting timing just on the level of
spoiler, like if you haven't seen this movie, like skip ahead.
Yeah,
but when you realize that like the costume that she's wearing at the beginning is like that she's dressed as the guinea fowl, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that like she's the one who like killed him with the car, it like I was just like, oh, this is genius.
Wait, there's no implication that she killed him.
Yes.
No,
because the guinea fowl is like the protector.
Yeah.
And that she is like the uncle, you know, was like sexually abusing everybody. And that she, as the guinea fowl, like as the protector of her family, like when she was driving home that night, like hit him with the car. That's why he's dead on the road.
I think that was an assumption. I don't think that was in the text.
No, I've talked with other people who, like, I think that's what it's saying.
I think what it's saying on her being the guinea fowl is that she realizes she has to face this to protect other people. And so then she centers her attention on the survivors of that family and, like, rescuing those children and, like, speaking truth to power within her living family.
Yeah, but I think she also killed the bad uncle. Because otherwise, why is he dead in the middle of the road?
Because he was at like some whorehouse, wasn't he? That was like, he just popped over because he was living a bad life. And like,
Right, but like she's wearing.
Maybe I need to rewatch it.
She's wearing that costume at the beginning.
So you think she went on some sort of vigilante? I'm going to dress up like Batman and go kill my uncle.
No, no. I think that the costume is like. I think the costume in the beginning scene is like not like a daydream or whatever, but you know, it's like how she sort of like envisions herself kind of thing. Like I think that she was driving the car along the road at night and she saw and she saw the uncle who she knew did these things, who she hates, and she was like, oh, this is my opportunity. Like, I can protect my family.
But piecing together how he did it to everyone. Like, that's the joy, that's the mesmerizing part of the movie is she's like, she was alone in this trauma and then realized, no, every single girl in her family was being abused by this man.
Well,
And so she's like gathering a little hint. All of
it, but she knew that he did it to her.
Yeah.
And I think that, and the whole thing is like kind of what's the word? Like surrealist in a way in certain pieces. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that she kills him.
I'll have to study this out because to me, like the power of the film wasn't, it was like in her having to face, like to reckon this reality of this known/unknown abuse happening and how it trickled down and affected these circles of extended family.
Well, that too.
And her finally saying, well, enough, like enough. You're going to fight over what we owe his widow. We're going to fight over what he meant to us. We're going to pretend, sit here and sob and judge how other people sob. But the truth is, like, we're all victims and like, and yeah, just like speaking truth to it, like finally saying it out loud and like demanding respect, like asking, gathering the little hens around her and being like, nah, this is not, we can't go on like this. But I never got the sense that it was like she killed him and then spent a week like pretending not to know that she, I don't know. I'm curious now. I'll have to revisit the ending.
She's wearing that crazy outfit in the beginning.
I just thought she was going to a party. Like, it was, like, unremarkable to me. It's like, because she's wearing the outfit for real. She's wearing it when her cousin gets in the car.
Yes, but it's, like, I think it's symbolic of, like, yeah, I think that it's symbolic of sort of, like, the, because once, because you don't know what a guinea fowl looks like until later on in the movie, and then once you know, it's like, oh, she was dressed as the guinea fowl at the beginning, like that's what that costume is that she's wearing,
right?
And that, yeah, she killed, I think she hit him with the car,
but we watch, like, her drive and she, it's not like clunk, clunk.
Yeah, but it's like, that's why I think there's like the surrealist sort of element to it. It's like, I don't think she was actually wearing that costume, and I don't think that, like, I think that there are some things in the movie that are like,
yeah, I'll have to revisit No, that's mesmerizing. Because I finished it and I was like, yeah, that's good. I wonder why Matt loved it so much. Now I'm like, okay, you had a different experience. Like, you had a completely different reading of that.
Yeah, so now I got to the end and I was like, wait, my mind is blown.
Yeah.
Like, she did it the whole time. Afterwards, when I was talking to other people who have seen it, they're all like, yeah, like, it was crazy. She, like, once it all clicked, it, like, really was so smartly put together.
Wow, okay, yeah, I must have, maybe I just was, yeah, okay, okay.
Well, we can all just rewatch it again, because, or at least that's what I took away from it.
Yeah, it's streaming on HBO Max, so I'll have to revisit that. Okay, I know we have to wrap this up. So my number two, okay. Wow. Yeah. My number two, The Life of Chuck, which is a surprise to me, but this movie really like sat with me. It is the Stephen King story directed by Mike Flanagan, and sort of starring, Tom Hiddleston and also Jacob Tremblay, who's having a moment, I guess, but it like takes place in three stories related tangentially to this life of Chuck, this character. It's kind of weird. I had no expectations going into it. It's definitely like, yeah, it doesn't like fit an easy genre, like narrative trope type thing. and it is kind of like a talky movie. Like, there's not a lot of action happening per se. Everyone's just kind of talking about their feelings and situations and whatnot. But it was really beautiful and like an interesting exploration of like purpose and life and joy in the pain and all of that. And it's just, there's been a few things that I've just, that have just stuck with me. And I think it was a nice surprise and like a really moving film that also happened to have a charming dance break by Tom Hiddleston. So 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I really loved The Life of Chuck. I feel like it didn't.
I think it's one of those, like you said, it just like found me at the right time.
Yeah.
And it just was like, oh yeah, that's a good reminder, Shelby.
Well, I also think that it's, I think it felt so Stephen King to me.
Yeah.
In a good way, because I obviously really love Stephen King's work, but I think it also sort of had it, like, it was a little watered down for me because I feel like I've gotten that same kind of thing like multiple times. But I did really love it. And I thought that that was another movie that the ending really like clicks it all into place and puts these sort of various pieces together in a way that I really loved.
Yeah.
So no,
I think we have the same.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that this was, is like the everything everywhere all at once year, where it's just going to be a lot of us going, oh, and the best movie is obviously Sinners. Like there, and there's no, like, I think Sinners is on number one on our list now. I think it's very, 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 very possible that Sinners will be the number one list on our movie at the end of the year. Like, it's just such a good, unique, interesting, well-done movie across every single, like, aspect of film.
Yeah.
It's so unique and singular. Like, there's not anything else like it. What it is saying, I think, is so important, with the exception of sort of like where, like, how did the other people get in the barn? Who there's some barn fight logistics that we have to sort of wash our hands of. But aside like, from that, it's really like a perfect movie.
Inter vampire fighting, it's fine. Everyone gets a little jealous. It's very, very well done and interesting. And again, there's a lot of discourse around it that I think elevates it. The music is great. The acting is great. What's funniest to me is that the word of mouth has been so strong for this film. And I've met multiple people who are like, yeah, I had no idea what it was about. And then suddenly there were vampires, or like even someone who's like, I did not know he played twins. And so I think that's always charming, is when people just trust the hype enough that they literally don't even care what it's about. They just show up. And I mean, I for the most part are pleasantly surprised, because everyone seems to like or love this movie.
Yeah, I this movie is sort of a hard one to describe to people. Like, I think that it's either marketed like as, oh, it's vampires, or like, oh, it's, you know, sort of like Southern racist slave kind of like Jim Crow energy.
Yeah.
And it's weird to try to explain to people how it is, like how it combines those things in such a compelling way. It really does remind me a lot of Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, it came out at the same time in the calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really difficult to explain to people like what it is about. It's very high concept, but it really like works. The script is so strong, but in addition to it being like high concept, it's also so emotional and so personal, and the characters are so well put together. But yeah, it does feel like it has just kept going and going and going and going and going and like continued to build steam. Is it like, I think it still might be in theaters in New York.
Yeah,
it's still playing here. Like,
yeah.
And also on HBO Max, if you'd like to watch it there. But
yeah, and it's a great rewatch. It's really, surface level is just a fun zombie movie. And then what's more exciting is all the pieces that fit together to make it like a really emotional human movie too.
Yeah. I've seen it twice already, which is saying something.
Yeah.
Because
Oh, yeah.
rarely go see movies second time, especially this good. I will say this. I also really want to rewatch Materialist. That is another movie that I would watch again.
Yeah, right, I'm now. Sure you'll just stumble into that one soon. Though I don't think that's in theaters anymore.
No, or I would have probably seen it.
Yeah. Well, when K-Pop Demon Hunters comes out, you can go to theaters for that one.
Maybe it'll be in theaters when you're here. You'll have to ask your top secret Netflix connection when it's getting released.
Yeah, exactly. I hope it's a sing-along.
No. It's just me, you, like 50 children. Yeah. You're like up in the front, like with the Taylor Swift documentary. Like, dude, like everybody's spinning in circle, holding hands.
Yeah. No, it'll be good. I mean, and it's also interesting because I feel like we're starting to get trailers for the fall movies and the holiday movies, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of sneaks ahead.
I feel like really the only big like Oscar movie that's out so far is Sinners. Like, it doesn't feel like anything else has really broken in to that space at all. So I think that means that we've got a fall full of interesting movies. Yeah.
There's a Spike Lee movie coming out.
I have actually seen that. So.
Oh, wow. Not a
it's
fan.
It's good. I feel like you'll like it.
Oh, okay. Okay, perfect.
It's a caper. It's sort of like Inside Man energy more than like Defy Bloods or anything. But
Yeah. Have you seen, or no, this is next year, right? The Ryan Gosling Project Artemis. Or Hail Project Mary?
Is that next year? No, I have... when is that?
I think it's like a dumpuary, actually.
What is it called? Project Hail Mary?
Project Hail Mary. It's such a good book. Such
2026.
A fun book.
March 2026. I have not seen that movie.
Okay. Yet. Well, anyways, that's all I've got.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm like, what is coming up? That
Bad Guys 2. You loved that one.
And I haven't seen the new Bad Guys yet, which is sad for me. Oh, next week we have Freakier Friday.
Oh, yes. Can't wait.
Freakier Friday / Weapons, which I also haven't seen but really want to see. That looks creepy as
Weapons?
Hell. That's the movie with the kids running out of a... Yes.
Right.
Maybe not a movie for you.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You'll have to read the Wikipedia page and see what you think.
Exactly. I'll see how I feel after thumbing through the plot excessively.
Do you think that if you and Penny switched bodies a la Freakier Friday, that would go well?
I mean, no, because she's a 4-year-old.
I guess that would be more like little.
That'd be pretty disturbing. I don't know how she'd even process that. I don't know. I think that would break her brain probably in some ways. That's an interesting movie premise. How young can a body swap go? That's nightmare territory, frankly.
I feel like I could do a body swap pretty easily. Like, if we body swapped, I think that I could take that in a stride pretty quick.
Like, you'd be fine with the idea, or you'd be able to play me fairly well?
I think both. Drama.
Oh, okay.
I think both.
Yeah.
I think I could play you better than you could play me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're just such a unique... It's such a unique talent, you know? It's
because just I would have to sort of, like, knock myself down a bunch of notches, you know? And I think you would have to, like, rev yourself up in a way that would be very annoying.
Well, it's like the great say. It's easier to do the... to do drama than it is to do comedy. And so you'd be able to play it a little more sour, a little more grumpy, a little more pessimistic, but it'd be hard for me to play slapstick, you know?
Yes.
Klutzy, whatever. I don't have internet in my apartment yet. Wow. You know, classic Midwest mess around.
Okay.
I couldn't do it. Rude.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. You have plenty of movies to watch. We've given you lots of recommendations. Don't see Drop. It's terrible. And we'll be back next week. Bye.